How are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing all right. Sitting here on a rainy Connecticut day.
It is rainy, and it is a day, and we are in Connecticut. It's all true.
Everything I said is accurate, as has always been the case throughout my entire life and podcasting career.
You only speak the facts.
Never said an inaccurate word.
Like when you said jazz sucks.
Okay. That's some old Paul Reichert level reductionist tweeting, and I repent from that.
You have fully repented. You've cleansed yourself.
I have. I don't sit around like listening to jazz, but I also try not to do definitive statements such as this thing objectively sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Just not even things I don't like. That doesn't mean they suck.
Yeah, that's true. It could just not be for you.
Right.
You
know? But then there's the Death Strandings of the world, but that's a different thing. That's a rare thing where I used to paint with a very broad brush saying things just objectively sucked.
Other than Death Stranding, is there anything that you could say with confidence just is objectively terrible? It doesn't have to be a piece of media. It could be anything.
I mean, look, we all know people we don't like, you know, but I'm not going to...
Specifically, who don't you like and why don't you like them and what's their phone number?
Jared Leto. I think Jared Leto seems to definitively suck. I don't have his cell number anymore.
I mean, he was really good in Blade Runner.
Oh,
he's a great actor.
There's a difference between sucking and not being talented.
Well, yeah, but I think even if someone sucks, if they're exceptionally talented, that redeems them in some quality, especially when we're talking about someone we don't know personally. You know
sure,
what I mean?
Sure. But I think I can safely tell you that if I met that guy, I would walk away from that going like, that guy fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Based on everything about him I've ever seen or read or heard or seen.
He might be really nice, Dan.
known Jared Leto defender, Bonk Reichert.
I'm just saying. I mean, you can't, that's not something you could definitively, or someone you could definitively say sucks. Because the only thing I know about him, his music is terrible. 30 Seconds to Mars, I don't like it. It's bad. But again, not for me. So I'm not someone out
sure.
there might like it. His acting stuff, he's great in flicks.
That is the one thing I can say. I could say his
pictures.
Acting is he is good at acting, his preferred
yeah,
profession.
So that's more you can say about a lot of people.
That's true. I just think the man sucks.
Okay.
And everything I've heard from every in-person encounter with him, everything he's ever said or done for the most part seems to suck outside of acting. So I would say Jared Leto is something I can very confidently say sucks.
Okay. All right.
That's,
I see.
That's my thought.
I was going to say like a death in the family.
Well, if we're talking about circumstances, like life circumstances.
Well, I mean, it was a broad category. You could have been as creative as
you
wanted.
Yeah, stubbing my toe, you know, when I busted my head open last week.
That was bad.
But that was at least kind of funny.
We have a story from that.
Yeah, yeah. And I kind of laughed about it later that night. Like that was funny. Yeah. So that wasn't all bad.
Yeah, we could even say it was great.
When Razor does that weird butthole scoot on the carpet.
I don't like
or
that.
Or on the rug.
Mm-hmm.
There's
like
nothing
that.
Good about that.
I don't like that one bit.
No.
I remember one time I like, this is just the internet being the internet, but I posted like a video of Razor being really excited and he like scooted for a second and like everyone was really upset by it. And I was like, what do you think I don't know about dogs scooting? Of course they take the dogs to the vet to get their anal glands. It's fucking people casting judgment. It's like, this one person I remember was like, imagine how uncomfortable it must be to wipe your butt on the rug to get it itched. And it's like, yeah, that would be uncomfortable, but we have hands and butt cracks, you know what I mean? We don't just have a hole there. Like, we have other means of itching our butts if we have to. We don't have to wipe it on the ground like a dog does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, speaking of itching your butt, you
sure.
know what I was thinking of that I used to do all the time that I never do anymore?
Does it involve your butt?
Yeah. When I was a kid, I feel like I was always digging out wedgies. I always had a wedgie and I was constantly fixing my wedgie. That doesn't happen.
Did you
happen
wear a different underwear type?
Maybe I was wearing like large underwear that was too large or something. I don't know.
That would explain
it.
It
was normal.
I feel like when I was a little kid, I was wearing tidy whities and I kind of remember that. But then like once I became like a young teenager, I started wearing boxers and it's less of an issue now.
You didn't get it all bunched up in there?
No.
Like, I would think that boxers would be uncomfortable to wear because they'd always be bunching up.
There is a thing where it's like if you're turning around, like I don't know what circumstance leads to it more. Like if I was like riding a bike or something, but like one side will kind of like hike all the way up and then you have to do the awkward thing where you're like digging your hands around to like kind of pull it around and it looks like you're messing with yourself.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, it's a bad look, but sometimes you got to just get that down there.
But if you have boxer briefs, which are like the tight boxers, you don't have that issue, right?
That can happen too. Okay. And like typically, like when I was doing long bike rides in Minneapolis, I was wearing boxer briefs, mm-hmm. and they would ride up a decent amount there.
Interesting. I'm surprised that they don't make like bras for cock and balls, you know what I mean? Because they're just hanging out all the time.
That's kind
and
of
there's
boxer
no,
briefs.
There's no support. There's very little support there. I mean, you look at a bra and it lifts, it separates, you know, it holds.
I mean, boxer briefs cradle everything.
Okay.
It brings it all, like it's like a zip, it's like a vacuum sealer bag for your business.
Oh, okay.
Down there.
I didn't know it was that supportive.
Yeah, it's not. You're not just like flopping around in there you're when you're flopping. Wearing. No, there's less flopping, more hugging. You
That's
know?
Good. I, for me, my biggest issue growing up when I was like a kid, and you know, didn't have any better sense was that like panty lines were the worst thing you could have as a girl. You couldn't have panty lines. So I would wear thongs all the time, and I'm still not averse to a thong right now and then. It depends on the clothes you're wearing. But, now I've been experiencing the freedom of just regular old, like bikini briefs, that style of brief. And it's, man, it's very liberating to just not have that fucking piece of floss up your ass all the time.
So wait, panty liner is...
No, panty lines.
Panty lines are what?
Panty liner is something that you wear if you, like, almost have your period, but you don't quite have your period yet. Panty
line... Is that different than pantyhose?
Yeah, completely. One's for your menstrual cycle, the other one is for covering your legs.
Oh, I don't know
no,
how this
okay.
stuff works.
All right, well, just to clarify, they're two very different things. Panty liners, do you ever see like a maxi pad?
I've seen commercials on occasion.
Okay, well, they're like smaller versions of those that are really thin. And it's just like, if you don't have your full-blown period or you're just like in between cycles or whatever, people will wear those. Panty line is when if I'm wearing a pair of like tight pants and I have normal underwear on, like not a thong, you could see the lines of my panties, like if you're looking at my butt. You know what I mean?
Through your pants.
Yeah, because it
okay.
You could see like where the underwear ends, you know what I mean?
Got it, yeah.
So yeah, my whole life growing up, I was like, oh, that's so gross. But now it's like, well, yeah, of course, I don't mind people knowing that I'm wearing underwear. Like, why would I be averse to that? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's just, why did somebody tell you that was a bad thing? Or
it was just, you know, growing up, you just see like all these like sexy thongs and stuff. And you're like, oh, I guess that's what I have to wear. And yeah, it wasn't until... embarrassingly recently that I was like, I could just wear normal underwear and it's totally fine.
Oh, we're adults. We can just do whatever the hell we want.
Yeah, and now they make the normal underwear that is like seamless or seam-free or whatever, so you don't have the panty lines and you don't have to wear a thong. It's pretty great. Underwear technology is the best. It's really advanced remarkably compared to other technologies that are still somehow so primitive seeming.
See, I feel like that must be a ladies thing because my underwear feels exactly the same as when I was 12.
Yeah, it probably is a ladies thing. For us, we have to consider not only just the practicality of it, but how it interacts with everything else we're wearing, you know? Mm.
I've never thought about how anything I'm wearing interacts with anything else.
Yeah, that's fair. It's, yeah. And not everyone does, you know? It's just... You know, you grow up with certain societal pressures and yeah. You're expected to look a certain way or whatever, or feel like you have to look a certain way. And yeah.
Most I've thought about it is some boxers have the button in front of the business hole.
Really?
And yeah. And that just seems like an unneeded layer because, you know, you're always going to be wearing like jeans or something when you're out. So it's not like you're at risk of flopping out there.
Yeah.
So,
really? A button?
Yes. I've seen some boxers that do the button on the flap where it's like, I just want the hole there.
Yeah. Just the thing that you would just whip it out when you're going
to
tinkle, right?
Yeah. You got to zip down, but then you can just flop it out and go to town.
When you're going to the bathroom, like at a urinal in a public place where you have to stand up to pee, do you pull down your boxers or do you just take it out?
Let me think. Okay, so I got to put myself in the scene here.
Okay.
Okay, so I unbutton, you do the belt thing, you do the top
Set
button
the
of
stage.
Your jeans.
There's a smell of beer in the air.
Uh-huh.
Some guy grunting in the little toilet area. What is it called?
Stall,
yeah.
The little toilet area. Okay, so I walk up there, you put your beer or whatever mm-hmm. on top of the thing, and then you belt off. Well, not off, you just, you know, open it.
Undo it, yeah.
And then you do the top button on your jeans, you unzip the jeans, and then you just pull your business out of the hole. On the boxers.
Okay, so I didn't know if people like pull down all the way and their butt is out.
Some
there.
Weirdos will probably do that, but like, yeah, or like go down to their ankles like they're in like, you know, second grade or something. But no, I go through the hole because otherwise it would feel weird to bring my business out the mm-hmm. top, mm-hmm. but not my balls. So
yeah, that would be weird.
Yeah, and it feels like too much to bring the whole thing out, like the whole package out. So I just stick the dong through the hole there.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that's how we do that.
All right, that's very interesting. Yeah, I don't have to ever worry about that. The great thing about women's bathrooms is that you pee and you poop in the same place. It happens one after another.
It's a one-stop shop.
Yeah. It's one advantage we have.
But if you have to poop, you can pee there, too, if you're a guy. They let you do both in one. But if you just need to do one of them, you got another option.
Okay. You know what? Now that I think about it, in a lot of public scenarios where there might be a line to use the restroom, maybe it is more efficient to have it separate. It's like, you're going to take a little extra time. You got the stall. But if you just need a tinkle, then go right for the urinal.
Yep.
Yeah, and there's no female equivalent. There's no way I could use a urinal. First of all, I'm too short. But I think even if I was tall enough, how would I? You can't, like, I don't think my urine stream is strong enough to, like a hose kind of make it over there.
You could talk to Mike Mahardy about that. Right. He could probably find some ways to make that work.
Well, he's famous for shitting in urinals, right? That's what he's known for.
That's his favorite thing. Yeah, it's his thing he does all the time.
It's all he talks about. Every time I try to talk with him about, like, anything.
Yeah.
He just starts talking about that, and it's really becoming an issue.
During the entire pandemic, he would drive to sports stadiums just out of nostalgia because he needed to get his fix of shitting in the urinals.
Yeah, so. He texts me like multiple times a day, like, "Hey, I'm shitting in the urinal right now." Just wants to let
you kept getting arrested for scaling fences late at night, trying to get into stadiums and shit in the urinal. Yeah. Beverly Hills Cop.
That's right.
Yes.
Speaking of breaking the rules.
Whoa, okay, all right. Yeah, she's shaking her head.
Breaking the rules of bathrooms, which are also the rules of life, which are created by law enforcement agencies.
Yeah, you're making it
and
worse.
And Jesus, the commandments. Aren't the commandments like a primitive set of rules? We have the Code of Hammurabi, which was the original written law.
I've never heard of that.
The Code of Hammurabi. Hammurabi's code. Eye for an eye. That's where that comes from.
I know the golden rule.
That the people with gold rule?
No. the do unto others as you would wish them do unto you.
I was under the impression that the golden rule, at least in the Reichert household, is that dogs aren't allowed on the couch while we're eating.
I guess that is our most strictly enforced
rule in
our household. Yeah. Yeah, that is the one we take the most seriously, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, treat people kindly. That's what Dan was trying to say, right?
Yeah, yeah. But to tie it all around, another rule we have in the household is you have a no pooping in the kitchen bathroom rule.
I've broken that rule many times. It's not a rule.
Sometimes you
anymore.
Just gotta poop.
Yeah, I got poopery for there. So
I noticed that. So we're both breaking the rules when we do our business in there?
Yeah, just use the poopery and you'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Beverly Hills Cop.
That's right, Dan.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
So, all right, here's the deal. This surprises me, as I think it has other people when I brought this up. I had never seen this until last night, and I guess I can see why that's surprising. It's got some real SNL DNA in it with Eddie Murphy, prime Eddie Murphy, like right around the end of his SNL run, because he was 80 to 84. This movie came out in 84. And it's also, it's a Don Simpson, Jerry Bruckheimer kind of action movie. Like, they made The Rock, you know? Like, which I think Don Simpson died right after. I think at the end of The Rock, it says in memory of Don Simpson. But yeah, they were the producers on this. So, like, everything about, you know, it being Eddie Murphy and this action movie, it feels like I should have seen it a long time ago.
Yeah.
I don't have an excuse. I seem to remember my mom had this on VHS. I think she had the first two on VHS when I was growing up.
Yeah.
And I don't have a good reason why I never put it in.
You know what I noticed about myself, at least? When something's like a franchise, like there are, I think, three Beverly Hills Cops movies, I'm less interested in seeing it. Because I feel like if it's movies that are like franchisable... Is that the right word, franchise? If it's a series. I don't know if they just have a certain quality or something, or maybe it's just my own just inexplicable bias to not being as interested in them. Like, for example, I hadn't seen Lethal Weapon for so long until recently, right, because I knew there was like a bunch of them. I don't know. It's like, well, what, I don't know. It seems like it's a huge commitment. But
that's interesting because like we've been talking about watching the first Rambo for a long time, yeah, and there are five of those.
Another example. Like Rambo, I haven't
seen. You've seen the fifth one.
Seen the fifth one, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and Rocky, which ones have you seen?
Seen the first one, second one.
Four. You've seen four with
definitely
Drago.
Seen four.
And then I saw Creed 1 and 2.
And I saw Creed 1 and 2.
You saw 3 with Mr. T?
Yeah, I haven't seen the fifth one.
Don't worry about
and
that.
I haven't seen Rock.
Balboa?
Balboa.
Yeah. Balboa is very good. I like that one a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, but so Beverly Hills Cop, like when this came out, like you said, Eddie Murphy was mainly known for SNL at this point. I know he had done like Trading Places and some movies, but this was his breakout role, right?
Well, yeah, because, like, keep in mind, this is 84. He had been on SNL for, like, 4 years at this point. He's still 23 in this movie.
Crazy.
Ew, what a talent, too. Like, there is something magnetic about this guy that, like, it's just unreal that at 23, he's so charismatic and carries that movie.
Are you suggesting that Eddie Murphy is going to be a star?
I think this kid's got what it takes. It's just like crazy because when you look at everything else about this movie, it's pretty boilerplate kind of like action movie type thing. But like he carries this movie in a way I can't think of a like the way that like a Jim Carrey would carry a Ace Ventura or something like that. Yeah, it's like this is the vehicle for yeah. Without Eddie Murphy, this movie is just completely forgettable.
Yeah, I think it's worth like explaining my expectations going into
this. Sure, yeah.
I thought it would be just like maybe it's because I've seen Coming to America, recently watched the
we part started of the second
new
one.
Coming to America, and there was that Dolomite movie. We
yeah,
watched
yeah.
a bit of that. I don't know. Maybe my expectations were changed from that or based on that. But I figured this would be like really over the top and ridiculous. Like you compared it to Jim Carrey, like. Jim Carrey in how absurd it is.
More like, broad, just like yeah. goofy slapstick.
Yeah, but I wasn't expecting it to be so grounded and him just kind of being like just this unbelievably cool, like doesn't really has zero respect for authority.
He's fucking with everyone the entire movie.
Yeah, and he's just smarter than everyone. And yeah. It's like it comes across as like somehow comes across as believable and everything. It's you know, not obviously not the scenario, it's a ridiculous scenario, but his character.
Well, he just owns it so much. Yeah. It just feels like I don't know if it was written for him or if he did a bunch of his own like dialogue or if he's just amazing at like bringing a script to life, but like every moment he is talking on screen, you're just drawn to him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read that a lot of the stuff in this movie is improvised.
I could see that.
Yeah.
I could totally see that.
And there's some takes in that were kept in the movie where you could see characters like really forcing themselves not to laugh.
I could see that. Like just this force of nature running around being the funniest person on the planet.
Yeah.
You know?
When he does his monologue about super cops at one point, I read that he was like averse to any kind of drug use whatsoever, like even coffee. So at one point while they were filming, he was really exhausted from all the filming and they had to do the scene. And he finally took like one sip of coffee and he was just so amped up on that one sip of coffee that he ended up doing that super cop monologue.
Which one was that?
It's one of the ones where he's talking to Taggart and the other guy, the main.
Judge Reinhold?
Yeah. By the way, what a cool name,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. Do you remember in Arrested Development when my name is Judge and it was him being the judge?
Oh, really?
Yeah,
I didn't
yeah.
put that together.
Yeah,
I had
yeah.
no idea. That's so funny. But.
Well, he has several like monologues or just moments where it's just he's killing me. Like when he gets thrown out of the window, we're not going to go beat for beat on the story here. It's like his friend gets killed. He goes to L.A. to investigate. He finds this like 80s villain, bad guy, art dealer, whatever, that's smuggling cocaine. He gets thrown out of the bad guy's office at one point, and his whole thing about like you're arresting me for getting thrown out of a window is like disturbing the peace. Like he's just hilarious there.
Yeah, he's really funny, and like all the stuff he's saying is just it's like, well, yeah, you agree with him. Like everything he's saying is true. And the thing is that's so awesome is that like and unusual is that the scenarios he's in, like for example the one you just referenced where he gets thrown out the window, like that's not an over-the-top insane scenario. You could see that happening. So he's kind of obviously being really hilarious, but he's also expressing our you know, our feelings and thoughts on what's going on. Like, as a viewer, yeah, it's like, that's absurd that he would be arrested for that. And I feel like a lesser movie wouldn't have acknowledged the absurdity of that.
Yeah, and all the parts where he's, like, mocking someone's voice, the, like, banana in the tailpipe thing, or, like, that lieutenant guy, and he's like, you can hear him through the glass, you know? Yeah. Like, he's just, he does hilarious voices.
Yeah, he's really funny. He's, I mean, obviously, Eddie Murphy's funny. It's newsflash.
Yeah.
But, yeah, and the great thing about this movie, too, is, like, it's got some action. It's obviously really funny, but it has a lot of heart too. Like, this, the central vein of the story is more just like a, not revenge, but like, his best friend is killed by these guys, and he wants to figure out what's happening. He wants justice. You know what I mean? It's not just some like random drug, like you know, no emotion tied up in anything, drug smuggling operation or some shit like that.
He's forced to go on vacation after his friend gets killed, and then he just takes that time personally to go to LA and kind of like gets tied up with their, and they're much more like kind of stuffy by the books police officers, which that main like lieutenant guy, he was in RoboCop. I knew he looked really familiar, and I looked up his IMDb. He was good in this. Like, I kind of like all the cops in LA in this. You know, they kind of start as like the super stuffy and they're being shitty to Eddie Murphy, but like by the end they're all kind of cool. For the most part,
even the people in the movie who are stuffy and who are often hampering his effort, or hampering Eddie Murphy's efforts, he ends up winning all of them over too by the end of the movie.
The late suppers and stuff that he sends to the car. So great. Which, by the way, whatever that stuff was that he sent to the car is all like shrimp salad sandwich. Like, the last things I would want to eat in a car, and like the smell would be terrible, I would imagine.
I think that it was really fancy food, right? It was like poached salmon with like some like lemon sauce or something. Like, it was fancy foods. It was inappropriately fancy for a car. But
then by the end, it was actually the police department that paid for all that, because they picked up the tab and he stole a bunch of robes.
That's right.
Yeah. So a couple of production notes I thought were really interesting here. So Bruckheimer said the role was initially offered to Mickey Rourke, and it was going to go with him. They signed a contract, but the revisions took too long, and he backed out. So they got Stallone, and they offered Stallone the role, and he like went crazy with rewrites and all this big elaborate change. And he was going to name it Axel Cabretti, which wound up being the name I think he used for Cobra Cabretti. And when Cobra came out, probably a couple years later.
It's another one I have to see.
The one thing I remember from that is that he cuts his pizza with scissors. He keeps pizza in his fridge and he cut. Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, you're just a Cobra.
It's not unusual. I mean, there's scissors that are meant for cutting food, you know.
Oh, okay. I think he's just taking like from Staples or something, and like Cobra is a no-nonsense kind of guy.
Children's safety scissors?
I think so, yeah. Other options that were considered were Richard Pryor, Al Pacino, and James Caan.
Wow.
I feel like every other option besides Eddie Murphy leads to a completely different movie here.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, this is Eddie Murphy's movie. I mean, like, defined by him and his personality. I mean, anyone else, it would just, be completely different. The thing is, the scenario and everything's rather generic, and there are no, like, mind-blowing action scenes or anything like that.
So there's the opening one with the cigarette truck. It's kind of fun.
It's fun, yeah, but it's not like, maybe my expectations are flawed because of what I'm used to now.
You've seen a couple Fast and Furious movies at this point.
Yeah. But I mean, stripped away of that, like, the main thing is Eddie Murphy, and like, he's like you said, the Ace Ventura comparison is very apt.
Yeah, or it doesn't work without them.
Yeah.
One other person in this movie that I was surprised to see is Mike from Breaking Bad, a much younger Mike, which is funny because I haven't thought about that actor. I forget his name, but I haven't thought of him in probably since like Breaking Bad went off the air. And I just started watching Better Call Saul when I work out in the mornings. And so I'm like seeing a lot of Mike lately. And it's like, oh shit, I saw him twice in one day. But in this, like a much, but he's so distinctly, he's so much younger, but he's so distinct looking.
Still looks the same.
Yeah.
You know?
And this is really funny to me because I always, okay, so Judge Reinhold and Bronson Pinchot, do you know?
Which one's Bronson?
So Bronson Pinchot is, remember, I'm sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. I've never been more positive of anything. Do you remember in True Romance, there was the guy, the Coke guy, that like the kind of like the dopey Coke connect that like he had the girl in the car and the Coke blew up all in his face and the cop pulled him over?
Yeah.
So that's Bronson Pinchot. And then there's Judge Reinhold. And I've always, my entire life, got them mixed up because they were both from like sitcoms a little bit before my time. I think Judge Reinhold was Night Court was his show, and then Bronson Pinchot was Perfect Strangers, I believe. And both of those, I feel, were like a couple years before I started watching sitcoms. They were kind of like, I was a little kid when those were on, and they both had weird names. But I both kind of recognize their faces, and for some reason, their faces kind of seem similar to me. But they're both in this movie, and so my whole life, when I thought of Beverly Hills Cop, I was like, oh, I know one of those guys mm-hmm. is in this. But then I saw both of them in this.
Wow.
Yeah. So Bronson Pinchot was the guy at the art dealership that is like, oh, do you want to live in Twisted?
Oh, that guy. Yeah. That, he was so funny.
Yeah.
I definitely recognize him from elsewhere as well, but I can't put my finger on where.
Yeah. And Reinhold's pretty funny at the end mm-hmm. When he's just like, he's kind of being like, oh, that's like the end of Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid. And like, he's pretty likable there.
Him and Taggart, when they were in like the car together, all that stuff was improvised. That thing about red meat and everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they worked out really well mm-hmm. too. Taggart plays the kind of like tough as nails, you know, no bullshit cop pretty well. I thought he worked out well. And I guess he's in all of them. And I do think I've seen Beverly Hills Cop 3 because that came out in like 94 or something. So I think I was watching TV at the time that was like on cable because I remember that set in an amusement park and I remember watching it and kind of liking it. But then I found out that was the one everyone hated.
So then you started hating it too?
No. I honestly just don't have any real memory of it outside of the amusement park part of that. But yeah, I'm curious about 2 and the reception to that. 2 is directed by Tony Scott. We've watched a Tony Scott movie recently. I can't remember what. I always get him and Ridley Scott mixed up.
How could you get him and Ridley Scott?
Ridley Scott.
Alien, Blade Runner, Tony Scott, Beverly Hills Cop 2.
No, he's done like Top Gun. Okay, now hang on. I got to look up Tony Scott here. No, he's, was it like Days of Thunder and Beverly Hills Cop? Let me, I feel like I should be a fan of him. Is he dead? Yes, he died. 1 second.
You killed him.
I didn't kill Tony Scott.
Everyone, Dan killed Tony Scott.
No. Here we go. He Enemy of the State, The Fan, Crimson Tide, True Romance. That's what we watched.
Ah.
He did True Romance, The Last Boy Scout, Days of Thunder, Beverly Hills Cop 2, Top Gun.
Well, based on True Romance, you know, I should see more than one movie of his before casting judgment, but I mean, True Romance, I didn't think was like, you know, there are definitely some questionable choices in the making of that movie for sure. So.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. One thing that I think this movie does incredibly, incredibly well is the music.
So it's very loud.
It's very loud. It's very constant. It starts with The Heat Is On, which is excellent. Great choice. I was instantly on board. Just title screen, Heat Is On playing. And then Axel Foley's theme.
What is it? Sum it for us.
That's it. That is the whole movie. And I think I just want that playing underneath every movie I've ever seen. Just,
I mean, we
seven.
Could just have it playing at a low level in the house at all times if you want.
Just get some like dedicated like speakers that just like, yeah.
Motion activated, so it's like whenever we enter a room.
I think we would put weight plates under the cushions on the couch, so as soon as it detects our butts. But it can't be light enough for a dog, so I don't want it going off at inappropriate times.
No.
So only when our butts are there. So it's like you sit down to play some Returnal and Axel.
That's what I need in the background.
Yeah, to set the tone of Returnal. Because I think, Returnal blows at setting a tone. So I think with some Axel Foley theme there.
Returnal's really bad. The only redeeming thing about it would be listening to Axel Foley's theme behind it. It's the only way that game would be playable.
We're both very much kidding. That game sets an amazing tone and is fucking killer.
Oh my god, it's so good.
I want to play it now.
Yes, now.
We should play Returnal tonight. Yes. But yeah, they just get so much mileage out of this theme. And they should, because it's fitting, it's good, it's memorable.
It's so catchy. Like, I have never seen this movie. At least, I think I never saw it. Maybe there's a chance when I was a kid it was on in the background or something. But I definitely know this theme, you know? I've definitely heard that a bunch of times.
It is, when people say, like, iconic theme, I think this is, like, exactly the type of thing they're talking about, you know? But, you know, I gotta say, I've heard for so long that I need to see this movie, and sometimes, especially with things that have kind of a, I won't straight up call this a comedy, but there's enough comedy in it for me to worry about this. You'll hear about, like, a classic comedy, and then you see it, and comedy doesn't age that well.
Up, yeah.
So it's like, I don't know, like, Blues Brothers, this is sacrilege to a lot of people I know, but, like, you know, my dad told me for years and years and years, you gotta see Blues Brothers. Oh my God, it's one of the best. So funny, so funny. And enough people, you know, say that, and I believe that they mean it and stuff. But I saw it. I watched it with my dad in Minneapolis years ago because he's like, finally, I'm going to get you to watch this.
There's no big monkeys in that movie, right?
Yeah, it's shocking that he saw it without a giant monkey in it. But not like Godzilla vs. Kong, which is too confusing, big monkey. But no, it's, I appreciated it. You know, there's some fun cameos. There's some fun action scenes. And I'm sure at the time it was like a revelation. But it didn't, I wasn't like laughing out loud throughout it the way it had been built up to me as one of the great, great comedies. And like a lot of people whose opinions I very much respect idolize, you know, the Blues Brothers movie. And it didn't have that impact on me. Spaceballs was similar. You know, I like Mel Brooks and everything, but I saw it too far after the fact, you know?
Yeah.
And it didn't really do it for me.
I think comedy, like much more than any other genre of movie, is like, so much is like what's funny is based on what the cultural standards are. If something makes you laugh, it's because you haven't heard it, because it's pushing boundaries, whatever. And as you know, society evolves, as it tends to do, those things that were once like so hilarious and like, oh my God, I can't believe you said that or did that, or then this happened, then this happened, it either gets played out or you know, things evolve to that our standards or our things that used to fly back then no longer fly,
sure.
Or now it's just commonplace, and it's like, oh, that's, you know, you just can't say that, or that's not funny anymore.
As someone who watched The Love Guru in the last month or two, I can tell you, yeah, a lot of comedy does not age that well, and that's from like 10 years ago.
Yeah, remember we watched Austin Powers? That was another one.
Well,
like, we watched the third
one. For the record, yes, the third one, which I think was not loved when it came out, but it was especially terrible now. But I do think that that first Austin Powers, I've seen that so many times. That came out when I was like 13, which is the exact perfect age to see Austin Powers. And I think back to those jokes, and I haven't watched the first one in a long time, but a lot of those jokes are very funny to me too, just like remembering them, you know?
Do you often just find yourself reflecting on that preparation age joke and giving yourself a chuckle?
What was the preparation age joke?
That he called the plan preparation age, his master plan.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny.
Just walking down the street, listening to the birds.
You know, no, but you know what joke I do think about on a fairly regular basis that makes me laugh?
What?
Is the joke when he gets woken up out of cryo sleep and he's sitting there with Elizabeth Hurley as they're going through his personal effects that they put in a box when he got into cryo sleep, and it's all super embarrassing stuff. It's like, oh, Swedish made penis enlarger pump. And he turns to her all sheepish and says, this sort of thing's not my bag, baby. And then the next thing the guy pulls out is a giant novel. It says, Swedish made penis enlarger pumps and me. This sort of thing is my bag, baby, by Austin Powers. Like he wrote a whole book contradicting the thing he just said to her. That is such a stupid joke.
That's stupid.
I think about that a lot. Yeah. It's very, what's the MacGruber? That's exactly what I said, MacGruber. I'm sorry, Colonel. Sounds like what you said was, yeah. Yes. That said, a lot of comedy does not age very well, but this, it's 100% on Eddie, and there is a timeless quality to his performance in this. I'd be curious to watch like the first Coming to America or Trading Places and things like that too, but boy, I feel like this is the strongest I've felt about like an Eddie Murphy movie role, probably, you know?
The one thing, you talk about things being kind of out of date, the one thing that made me laugh is when he meets his friend Jenny Summers or whatever, the art gallery leader, boss lady, whatever she's called, whatever her role is there. He meets her for the first time in presumably years. And he's like, wow, you've really filled out.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, yeah. Thanks.
That's how platonic male and female friends talk to each other. You filled out.
It's, yeah, it's just immediately. But I will give the movie credit for not just doing the whole, you know, love interest type of thing. Like, it seemed like there was some flirting going on, but they never, like, ended up making out or anything like that.
At worst, it's just the thing where she's thrown in there to be, like, taken hostage and, like, you know, like, that's a pretty boilerplate 80s action plot. But, yeah, none of it, I think, aged super terribly or anything like that. Like, I just thought it overall aged very, very well.
Yeah.
Specifically Eddie Murphy's performance.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Yeah. So
I heard like recently people talking about some of his more famous stand-up specials.
Raw and Delirious.
Yeah. And like specifically going back to those and like thinking they didn't age well. And
that's the thing. Yeah, I haven't seen Raw or Delirious in a long time. I used to have them on DVD. And like some of it is just like incredible, like, oh my God, the energy this guy has, and he's just got the crowd in the palm of his hand. It's like once in a generation type of comic. But I do remember, like, I remember there were several bits that
wouldn't go over well today.
No, not at all. Like, in fact, I think he would, he's like apologized for it, and it's, some of it's rough. He was very much like, I'm going to push the boundaries in a way that did not age at all. But I'd be curious to go back to that, because I just do, my general memory of those is him just being a revelation in terms of just energy and stage presence and all that stuff. So I'd be curious about the material, because I don't remember like a lot of the specifics, you know? Yep. But yeah, Eddie, I want to see more of him. I saw that there was some rumors of Netflix optioning like a fourth Beverly Hills Cop movie. I want to see more. Like, I know he's had that like in the Dolomite thing, and then he hosted SNL. I heard there's another stand-up special in the works. I'd be very curious to see what a 2021 Eddie Murphy special is like.
Yeah, I feel like if we want to watch more Eddie Murphy, though, we should probably go back to the 80s. That's probably peak Murphy, wouldn't you say?
Probably, yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Also, he made that song Party All the Time, which is genuinely really catchy.
Well, and Boogie in Your Butt, which Boogie in Your Butt is a bona fide classic.
Okay, but Party All the Time is like really, like, it's got that bass line that's like really groovy.
Oh, you see Rick James in that video and he is into it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, big fan of what I saw there. I can see why he was a phenomenon back then.
He passes our test.
Yeah, yeah, give the stamp of approval, painting the stream, says yay on Eddie Murphy. Yeah. Yep.
This kid's going places.
Yep. But that'll be it for our chat on Beverly Hills Cop. We watched it on HBO Max, as we watch a lot of things on HBO Max, because God damn it, that selection is so good.
There's a lot of stuff to watch on there.
We're about to finish season 3 of The Wire on there as well. Which, no spoilers.
Down in the hole.
You love the season 3 version of the theme. I won't give any spoilers, but we are near the end of season 3, and hoo boy, stuff has happened.
Yes.
Yeah, it's, yeah, really looking forward to watching more of that.
Gosh.
Sometimes things will happen in that show where I don't frequently hear you, like, exclaim things while we're watching stuff, but you'll just be like, you know? Yeah. It's good stuff. But yeah, we got the Patreon there. A special shout out to everyone who subscribes on the Patreon. It's patreon.com/paintingthestream.
Thank you.
Gets you ad-free episodes. Gets you early episodes a day early. You get your access to the Discord. I think we got like 700 people in there now.
That's a lot of people.
And most importantly for you, you get Written for You by Bonk. It's a Bonku. Bonk, do we have someone this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Who do we got?
This week, we are honoring our friend Chris.
Hey, Chris.
Chris, if you're listening right now, I hope your day is swell. I hope this puts a smile on your cutie pie face. And this Bonku is for you. Oh, my phone the screen just turned off.
Okay. Was that the Bonku?
Yeah, yes. Sorry about that, Chris.
It's a bad one.
I was in a bad mood when I wrote that. Chris told me to look inside the brown paper bag for a nice surprise.
I don't know what to think of that one. I don't know what Chris is up to here.
Frankly, you don't want to know.
All right, Chris. Well, that's
it's like
between
a Blair Witch bundle of organs and leaves.
Oh, geez, or just shit. Or it could be like a bunch of chocolates or something. You just have no idea. All right, yeah. Chris.
If I opened a bag and saw a bunch of brown stuff, I would be really weird.
I don't open mystery bags. I don't open mystery bags. That's a policy of mine.
Remember that one time we were on the beach with Hanson and Tim? And we saw it like what it could, like when you think of mystery bags, it's exactly what you're thinking of.
It was like a tent.
Well, there was this weird mystery backpack laying on a blanket, which like had like this ritualistically arranged like shells and rocks all around it. It was so fucking weird.
Yeah.
And it was like there was a tarp or something draped over it, so we couldn't make out if there was a body underneath there or whatever. And I think one of them, Tim, went down there and lifted it up, or
I think Hanson might have done it.
And there was a bag there. Didn't the bag have?
It was
just
a backpack
like
with like some exactly, like half drink Gatorade bottles.
So
it was like
underwhelming.
With like a weird ritual thing around it. Like we thought it was just going to be like a skull or something. Like,
yeah, I mean, come on, that's on the spectrum from like decaying corpse to Gatorade bottles, like half drinking Gatorade bottles at that. I mean,
yeah,
so disappointing.
I thought it was gonna be something there'd be like a Netflix documentary about or something, but no, it's just
we were walking on the beach. I mean, it was an ordinary day, and we happened to see this bag on the beach, and Tim had the courage to go and look inside of it, and our lives were irreparably changed.
Well, although if it was a modern day documentary series on a streaming platform, it would be like 20 episodes about that.
Of course.
Yeah. It's like everyone that was on the beach that day telling their life story. Yeah. Yeah, it's just way too long. Could have been told in one really good episode. But yes. Oh, and real quick, speaking on the Patreon, Bonk, you flipped the switch on something recently. It's a new Patreon feature that if you want to, if you like the podcast and you know you want to support it month after month and don't want to have to worry about the recurring things or whatever, annual subscriptions are a thing we have turned on now. It should be pretty easy. If you go to patreon.com/paintingthestream and you go to support, you should see the option to do it annually. And if you do that, you will save 15% on the patron fees.
Yeah,
so less than
nice.
$5 a month.
Good for everyone.
It is, and we're not going anywhere. So, yeah, if you want to support, you can support annually now. Before we go, we have an Omar review. This might be the last one. We might switch over to a different ending segment after this. So I just pulled up one here.
So everyone really savor this, because this will be the last Omar.
And if you can just look him up on Yelp if you want to find his stuff. If you can't get enough Omar. Okay, so this is his review of the Gun Hill Service Station in, I think, the Bronx. Okay. Are you ready? I walked into this gas station at roughly 3 in the morning. I asked to use by the way, there's no periods or anything here. I asked to use the bathroom, and I had asked also to purchase some gas. Now, this was an emergency and went into the bathroom. To realize that there was no toilet paper, I walked outside and asked if there was any toilet paper, and I was told that it was going to be an additional $4. This is some scumbag shit, and this only happens in the Bronx. I would just like to say that this gas station doesn't deserve anything more than 1 star. I did buy the roll of toilet paper for $4, and I made sure to leave it in the toilet bowl. Thanks a lot, guys. Keep up the awful service. 1 star.
Gotta say, I agree with Omar on that one.
That sucks.
Pretty shitty.
Yeah. I mean, the fucking toilet better have some toilet paper.
Yeah, it's
to it.
Their job to keep the toilet paper stocked.
Yeah, yeah. Look, he's not wrong at all. I mean, you didn't have to leave the toilet paper in the roll in there. Yeah, yeah.
Reminds me of one time we were at dinner, like at this buffet that we used to go to, my family and I, and like the service was terrible, like actually like not just like they're having a bad day, like literally terrible. And they sat us like right in front of the front door, so people were like always online behind us, and it was like really cramped, and Grillman was so fucking pissed off that he went into the bathroom and he like flooded one of the toilets.
Jesus Christ, really?
Yeah.
Oh my God, he must have been pissed.
He was really, they were terrible. I mean, it was deserved, you know.
Jeez, that sounds awful. My goodness. And with that, we will, we started and ended with some toilet talk.
Toilet talk.
There we go. We bookended it.
Ah, we wiped our butts with it.
There we go. I was going to try to bounce off that, and I got nothing for you. Razor would scoot his butt on that. Wouldn't you, buddy?
Yeah. Not very thoughtful response there, Daniel.
Yeah,
call back to our earlier reference about Razor scooting his little butthole.
I got nothing. But folks, I hope you are having a nice week, and I thank you for listening to Panning the Stream. Go check out Beverly Hills Cop on HBO Max if you'd like to watch, and I hope you will join us next week. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thank you, everyone.
See you all next week. Bye-bye. Bye.